Ryan Reynolds here for, I guess, my 100th Mint commercial. No. Don't. I mean, honestly, when I started this, I thought I only have to do like 4 of these. I mean, it's unlimited premium wireless for $15 a month. How are there still people paying 2 or 3 times that much? I'm sorry, I shouldn't be victim blaming here. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch. Whenever you're ready.
$45 upfront payment equivalent to $15 per month. New customers on first 3 month plan only. Taxes and fees extra. Speed slower above 40 gigabytes. See details.
It can be hard balancing taking care of kids, senior loved ones, and yourself. Remember, it's okay to ask for help. There's a reason 29 million families have turned to care.com. Find background checked sitters, nannies, and senior caregivers who can help with everything from watching kids after school to senior meal prep. Whether you need full-time, part-time, or even occasional help, you can view rates and book highly rated caregivers that fit your budget and schedule. Get the help you need with care.com.
This episode is brought to you by AquaTrue.
Raj, let me ask you something. Are you doing water wrong?
I mean, definitely. For one, I'm sure I'm not drinking enough of it. And two, I'm mostly drinking from the tap. And while New York City water is good, I know there's a better way.
There's definitely a better way. And that's where AquaTrue comes in. AquaTrue purifiers use a 4-stage reverse osmosis purification process. And their countertop purifiers work with no installation or plumbing. It removes 15 times more contaminants than ordinary pitcher filters, and they're specially designed to combat chemicals like PFAS in your water supply.
And they have water purifiers to fit every type of home, from installation-free countertop purifiers to higher capacity under-the-sink options. They even have a Wi-Fi-connected purifier and mineral boost options.
The filters are affordable and long-lasting. No changing filters every 2 to 3 months. AquaTrue filters last from 6 months to 2 years.
Best of all, the water tastes fantastic, and you don't have to worry about PFAS or other harmful contaminants. It's even portable, making it perfect for renters or dorms.
There's definitely a better way to do water, and to do it right. Raj and I have been using AquaTrue filters for a while now, and we can definitely taste the difference.
I got it delivered straight to my door, and not only do I love drinking water more, but it's literally making even my coffee and tea more delicious.
I don't have to worry about dicey tap water anymore because my default is AquaTrue.
Time to stop living that hashtag no filter life and get AquaTrue.
AquaTrue comes with a 30-day money-back guarantee, and it even makes a great gift.
Today, our listeners receive 20% off any AquaTrue purifier. Just go to AquaTrue.com, that's AquaTrue.com, and enter the code WRONG at checkout.
That's 20% off any AquaTrue water purifier when you go to AquaTrue.com and use promo code WRONG.
Hi, I'm Raj Punjabi, head of identity content at HuffPost.
And I'm Noah Michelson, head of HuffPost Personal.
Welcome to Am I Doing It Wrong? The show that explores the all too human anxieties we have about trying to get our lives right. All right, Noah, are you doing hydration wrong?
I definitely am because I don't hydrate enough. And actually, Benji gets on me all the time about this. He's like, have you had any water today? My grandmother infamously never drank water.
Oh my God.
Ever. All she wanted was coffee or tea.
Yeah.
And I've heard that those are actually dehydrating.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I need to do it more. I don't know if I'm doing it right. I need help. What about you?
You know, I am quite paranoid about water intake now in my life. So I drink a lot of water, but I think I just like panically like chug it sometimes. I'm not doing it the right way. Like sometimes my hydration is high and other times I'm like the parched, you know, desert wanderer.
You don't have like a controlled routine.
No, right? No, I just am neurotic and anxiety induced. So I feel like that's not the right way to hydrate.
Well, our guest today, and I didn't even know this place existed, it's Colleen Munoz. She's the director and co-founder of the Hydration Health Center at the University of Hartford, which sounds super cool. And she's also an associate professor of health sciences there. So she knows everything about hydration, and soon we will too.
I love that. Get us right, Professor Colleen.
Colleen, thank you so much for being here.
Thanks for having me. This is exciting.
So to start, I'm just going to ask, what the hell is a hydration health center and what do you do there? I've never heard of one before.
It sounds lovely.
Yeah, you know, and there's probably an explanation as to why you haven't heard of one before. But so the Hydration Health Center is a research center. It's based on the University of Hartford campus. We're a small liberal arts school. And really what we are up to is we're dedicated to really clarifying the relationship of hydration on acute and long-term health conditions. So really, you know, things in the short term and things in the long term. And also recognizing that there's a lot of complexity within that topic. So we're really focused on identifying those relationships as they're appropriate across the age continuum and also clinical conditions. And really what we are particularly doing in a novel way is we're really using a complex systems approach and advanced analytics. So, I mean, to be honest, things that the business world has been using for probably decades, but the biology fields are a little behind. And, you know, of course, a lot of that comes down to funding and things like that. But so we're hoping to really start answering some important questions as they relate to hydration and health and well-being by taking a new approach and not being so reductionist and siloed. That's something that we've been a little guilty of in various biological fields, but including hydration. And so not to say that that doesn't have its place. It does. Sometimes we need to isolate things, right? Like a certain scenario or a variable, and that has its power in a research setting, but that's not how the real world works, and that's not how the body works. There's a lot of things that interact, and that's really our approach to this topic.
Super cool.
Yeah.
Let's start with the basics, because I think most of us think of hydration as just like how much water you have in your system. How do you define hydration?
This is actually a topic that we've had to clarify even among hydration scientists over the last, I would say, like 10 years or so. So, you know, definitely as we're trying to define hydration, it's obviously about how much water we drink or replace if we lost water through sweat, for example, is a common cause. And it's definitely the basis of hydration, but there's more to it than just how much water are we taking in. So another aspect is really, you know, what else is either already in the body or needs to be consumed at the same time to allow that water to stay in the body. So that's where this gets complicated. There's really a variety of things that we call solutes. They're just small particles, everything from electrolytes, which are normally a collection of salts, whether that's sodium, chloride, potassium, calcium, magnesium, the list goes on. But we also include in that definition of solutes or particles, things like carbohydrates and proteins and fats. And so those things actually need to come in at the same time. And obviously some of them a little bit more important than others in order for us to maintain hydration. So I'll stop there. There's a little bit more to this story, but I'll stop there for now.
No, I think that's so interesting because I think you're right, Raj. We do just think about it being water, like end of sentence. But yeah. I love this idea that actually it's an entire system. And the other things you're putting into your body are going to have an effect on how much of that water stays or how much of it leaves and what that water does. So that makes total sense. What happens, Colleen, if we get dehydrated? I think so often we just hear that word thrown around and it's like, you don't want to be dehydrated. Don't be dehydrated. Yeah. What actually is happening to us and why is it bad?
Yeah, and actually that gets folded into the previous conversation of how we define this, because the terminology is actually specific to certain contexts. So dehydration, it's really best used in terms of the process of losing body water. So whether that's not taking it in, and or sweating a lot at the same time. So that's really like dehydration is the process of losing body water. And so that's when we get into terms, like if you want to talk about your hydration state, we start to use various terms. So if you've been dehydrating and you've lost body water, you're in a state of hypohydration. However, the clinical world, so if you go to the emergency room or something like that, they tend to use slightly different terminology. So they still use the term dehydration quite a bit. And so we often refer to that as clinical dehydration. And so what that means is that you've lost more pure water from your body, and that is raising the concentration of other body water compartments, and specifically the blood, especially when we start talking about clinical dehydration. So when I say that it's becoming more concentrated, the balance is out of whack. We have too many salts, for example, in high concentration relative to the amount of water in our blood. So that's really like the true definition of clinical dehydration.
I want to talk about indicators of dehydration, because let me tell you, when I'm hungover, I look like the crypt keeper. Like I'm like, everything is like crumpled up and turning to sand. And when I've had a lot of water and not alcohol, I look like Moana. So like, please tell me what the indicators are besides crypt keeper versus Moana.
Right.
Okay. So this is one of those things that the Hydration Health Center is definitely focused on. There's a number of other researchers that are looking to come up with what we might call biomarkers or indicators of how well hydrated we are. And to be perfectly honest, we currently do not have a gold standard measurement that is appropriate across all contexts. So for example, if we have somebody who is, let's say, exercising, and especially if they're exercising in a hot environment, which, by the way, is actually where we know most about hydration and health. Like, most of us started in that research environment where it's an extreme scenario, you know, and now we're a little bit more interested in applying this to the general population. But nonetheless, so if we have somebody who's exercising in the heat, actually, one of the best indicators is the concentration of the blood. Okay, now, hopefully right now you're thinking, how would I ever measure that on myself? Because that's obviously, right off the bat, one of the issues with this topic. But if we flip this and we look at a different context, and let's say we actually just remove the exercise part, we actually find that looking at urine concentration is a better indicator of how hydrated we are.
Right.
And even more so, the general population, we tend to see that variables in the urine are really what we should be focusing on currently. That's our current knowledge. Okay, so when we're talking about urine concentration, I would say probably the best thing that people can use as a tool is very inexpensive. It's pretty easy to use. It's simply looking at the color of your urine. Now, I'm not saying that that's a perfect marker, but it's a very easily accessible one. And it actually gives us a lot of good information. So we're normally looking for like a light yellow color. So, you know, lemonade, straw kind of color. And we are not looking for clear urine. And that's one of those things that I still have a lot of people tell me. And people who are well-educated in biology sometimes, you know, will tell me like, my urine was clear today. So that's good, right? I'm like, no. You know, there is such a thing as drinking too much water.
Oh, wow.
Which I'm sure that's a topic we'll get to. And that's one of the things that we always need to make sure that we include in these conversations because, well, it's not super common. It's definitely possible. So I would say that the urine variables, and I think what you're going to start to see, you know, I have a little bit of an insider look on this just in conversations with other researchers and people who fund these topics. But there are a lot of startup companies out there that are looking to make at-home devices that measure urine concentration with a little bit more clarity. But so I would tell people on average, you know, just every time you go to the bathroom, look to see, you know, what does that look like? And I know it's a little dilute in the toilet, so we have to keep that in mind too. But that can be a good opportunity to, you know, start changing some practices throughout the day.
And also if you've taken supplements or vitamins too, that's also going to be tricky, right? Because I've definitely seen that like golden,
just like
crazy urine. And I'm like, I don't think I'm super dehydrated. I think I just took a B12 or something.
Yeah. So that's definitely something that we've researched to an extent. And to be honest, what we found is that some of the things that people classically thought might affect urine color probably don't do it as much as you'd think. And I think the other important thing to remember is that it's short-lived. So even with that B12 or, you know, a lot of these vitamins are water soluble. So they'll actually leave your system pretty fast, you know, on the order of like a few hours. But that is an important thing to remember, right? It's just like the, you know, if you ate a beet salad the night before, right, you're probably not dying. You know, you probably actually don't have blood in your urine. But again, you just have to kind of keep that in your memory. What did I eat recently so that you can make some sense of what you're looking at?
I have definitely panicked multiple times being like, and then I'm like, oh, the hot pink pee is because I had beets. Yeah, it's right. Absolutely crazy. What about just like feeling thirsty? I feel like that's a myth too. It's like drink water when you're thirsty. I feel like that's not totally true. Just drink water when you're not thirsty too.
Yeah. And I'm very glad you guys brought up the thirst component to all of this. So we for a long time now realized that thirst is not the best indicator of how much water you need. Now, does that mean that you should ignore it? No, absolutely not, right? If you're thirsty, it is time to start drinking water. Now, there's some caveats to that. Obviously, there's some medications that make people thirsty that are not necessarily respective of your body water balance. But so I'm going to go back to the exercise data just for a second, because this was some of the first indicators that told us like, wait a minute, what's going on with thirst? It tends to be really delayed. So we find in an exercising person, by the time they've lost about 2% of their body mass solely attributable to sweat losses, that's when they start to become thirsty. And I mean, that can be several pounds if we're talking about like the typical 70 kilogram person. You know, I think we're actually talking about close to 4 pounds of water loss there.
Wow.
So it's a little late to tell you that it's time to start drinking water. So that's another thing we need to keep in mind. But if we start actually looking at data from just the, you know, people going about their daily lives, not an exercising population. We have some studies that show that people who drink as much as, you know, over 3 liters a day versus somebody who drinks a little over a liter a day will often report the same thirst perception throughout the day. And clearly those are different amounts of water. Same kind of thing, even if we tell somebody to lose a lot of water. So I know we've done some studies where we don't let people drink any water for 24 hours. We have them come back in and we rehydrate them with various amounts of water. We've actually found that drastically different amounts that we gave them back that still didn't even match what they lost. Their thirst was exactly the same after about 30 to 60 minutes. Wow. So, and you know, that's a very important thing, to be honest. That's actually a protective mechanism that our body has, because our body is conscious about taking in too much water and especially too fast as well. So that's probably why that evolutionary mechanism exists.
I think one of the golden rules of health that we've all heard since we were in kindergarten probably is that we should be drinking 8 glasses of water a day. Is that actually a number based in science? And how much would you say a person, and obviously different sized people, different bodies are going to be different, but is there a number that you found scientifically that people should be trying to hit?
Yes. So, I think what people should recognize right away is that there are world organizations that have put forth guidelines for the general public, and they're based, you know, all over the world. So the World Health Organization, the European Food Safety Authority, and the National Academy of Medicine, which is US based. And when you look at their recommendations, first of all, they're based on sex. So they have, you know, a column for males and they have a column for females. And I would say, first of all, recognize that there is some relationship with body size and water intake needs. Mm-hmm. So right off the bat, we have to be a little cautious with looking at male versus female recommendations, because I imagine we all know some females that are bigger than some males, right? So we always have to kind of keep that in mind. Mm-hmm. But when you look at those guidelines, they're quite different from one another. You know, I think for males, for example, they range from 2.7 to 3.7 liters a day. Mm. And when we're only talking about a range that is just shy of 4 liters, and that difference is a liter, like that's a big difference in our scale here, you know? And so some of that comes from, where did these numbers, how were they derived? They are based on scientific evidence. First of all, they didn't come from completely nowhere. Do we have enough scientific evidence to support them? Absolutely not. Mm. But why are they so different? In some cases, these organizations decided to incorporate an understanding that this person might also be doing some exercise. So let's add in a fluid amount that's appropriate to match that. Let's also consider that people are going to take in water from foods as well. And so when we look at these guidelines, they're really guided towards like beverage intake, right? Mm-hmm. Not necessarily total water intake that would include foods. So that's one reason why they're quite different from one another. But, you know, getting back to the 8-ounce glasses a day, that's a little bit less than 2 liters a day. And 2 liters a day is the bare minimum for what these organizations are recommending. Mm-hmm. And that's for women. So for women, it's at least 2 liters a day. And for men, it's at least 2.5 liters a day. And so if we look at those and we think about the 8-ounce glasses of water, I mean, that's on par. Now, let me just quickly give one little anecdote here. There was a little over a year ago, there was a study published in Science. The author was Yamada. And it was very, very well done study. There was a little bit of language in there that I think was drastically misinterpreted, unfortunately, by a scientific reporter. And to be honest, what really looked like what happened is that this person read the article, and I'm not sure they either read it in enough detail or they just kind of misunderstood a little bit of this field and its complexities. And they made a statement, and it almost seemed like at least 5 other reporters after that made the same claim. And it almost seemed like they just read the first reporter's comments without reading the paper themselves. And so this just blew up and it went national news. And basically their headline was that turns out we don't need to be drinking as much as people say, that 8 ounce glasses of water. No. And that was not what the study showed. Right. So we actually really had to, a collection of hydration scientists throughout the world got together and wrote some letters to the editor to address that. And, you know, we still strongly feel that based on a lot of data, that is probably at least the ballpark, if not a little bit more, that we should be drinking. And of course, the challenge with the scientific reporting is that story didn't get followed up on, you know, so the general public has only heard the first message.
I'm like picturing all of you like meeting in the hydration equivalent of the Bat Cave and being like, we have to fight this.
Yeah. I love that. Yeah. I would watch that Pixar movie.
You're giving me ideas for remodeling.
I would watch that movie. And I just have to ask, like, that this is super important because being hydrated, drinking enough water has like long-term effects on our health. Could you just like briefly tell us like a couple of jarring things, like reasons we need to be, why you needed to address this misinterpretation of the study?
Yeah. So I got to start by saying we're kind of infantile in this work. We have so much that needs to be done, but we can say things with, you know, we have strong evidence for certain things at this point, not many, but one of them is kidney stones. So we finally can say with confidence that drinking enough water helps with especially the recurrence of kidney stones. So people who have already developed them once, you know, drinking ample water will reduce the reoccurrence of those. And then I would say the other one that is particularly fascinating to a lot of us at this point are things related to like a group of conditions we call cardiometabolic diseases. So the one that seems pretty clear at this point is type 2 diabetes with hyperglycemia.
Yeah. Wow.
So what we realize is that if we are not drinking enough water, we release this hormone. It's got a few different names, you know, just to make things even more confusing than they already are. Arginine vasopressin or AVP or vasopressin. And what most people know it as is the anti-diuretic hormone. Mm-hmm. And so if something is anti-diuretic, it actually prevents us from releasing water via the urine. It essentially tells our body to conserve water. It's a time where we haven't been drinking a lot and we've been losing a lot. So this hormone says, keep what we have. And so this hormone also tells the liver to produce and release glucose or sugar into the blood. So basically, if we are not drinking enough water, this appears to be an important part of the risk profile for developing hyperglycemia and type 2 diabetes. Wow. So I think that's probably one of the big headlines at this point of what we're starting to understand. And we do have some mechanisms that describe that causality. It's not just an association. But, you know, some of the other things that people are trying to nail down and collect data on would be like urinary tract infections. Some people have long been interested in chronic kidney disease and various other mm-hmm. kidney diseases. Definitely some cognition things of how well our brain works. You know, yeah. the list goes on. There's a lot of theoretical connections at this point, but we need a lot more data.
Professor Colleen, all of those things sound terrifying and painful, but everyone who's listened to this podcast regularly knows that I talk about the kidney stone I had 2 years ago a lot. It was the most, it was so traumatizing. It was the craziest pain I've ever felt in my entire life. And it was in big part because I was dehydrated. And they told me that. And let me tell you, I am like very militant about water now because I don't wish that pain on my worst enemy. Like, everyone out there, drink more water because I just don't want you. Like, the other stuff is scary too, but I never want you to feel the birthing pain that I felt.
Right. You didn't even get a baby out of it.
Without even getting a baby out of it.
Right.
Not cute. Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, I mean, there's definitely other things that we've made connections with in just terms of well-being, you know, and how you feel. Like there's a number of really associative studies at this point and a couple that manipulated fluid intake. So a little bit more causal, but show that we don't feel as invigorated when we're not drinking
water. Yeah, totally.
We feel more fatigued. Mm-hmm. And then there's been a few papers that have started to suggest that maybe there is even a relationship with perception of confusion and maybe mm-hmm. even depressive symptoms. So, you know, that's an interesting one that obviously we need to pick out a little bit more too.
Let's take a quick break and we'll be right back.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front payment equivalent to $15 per month. New customers on first 3 month plan only. Taxes and fees extra. Speeds slower above 40 gigabytes in details.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
This episode is brought to you by AquaTrue.
Raj, let me ask you something. Are you doing water wrong?
I mean, definitely. For one, I'm sure I'm not drinking enough of it. And two, I'm mostly drinking from the tap. And while New York City water is good, I know there's a better way.
There's definitely a better way. And that's where AquaTrue comes in. AquaTrue purifiers use a 4-stage reverse osmosis purification process. And their countertop purifiers work with no installation or plumbing. It removes 15 times more contaminants than ordinary pitcher filters, and they're specially designed to combat chemicals like PFAS in your water supply.
And they have water purifiers to fit every type of home, from installation-free countertop purifiers to higher capacity under-the-sink options. They even have a Wi-Fi-connected purifier and mineral boost options.
The filters are affordable and long-lasting. No changing filters every 2 to 3 months. AquaTrue filters last from 6 months to 2 years.
Best of all, the water tastes fantastic, and you don't have to worry about PFAS or other harmful contaminants. It's even portable, making it perfect for renters or dorms.
There's definitely a better way to do water, and to do it right. Raj and I have been using AquaTrue filters for a while now, and we can definitely taste the difference.
I got it delivered straight to my door, and not only do I love drinking water more, but it's literally making even my coffee and tea more delicious.
I don't have to worry about dicey tap water anymore because my default is AquaTrue.
Time to stop living that hashtag no filter life and get AquaTrue.
AquaTrue comes with a 30-day money-back guarantee, and it even makes a great gift.
Today, our listeners receive 20% off any AquaTrue purifier. Just go to AquaTrue.com, that's AquaTrue.com, and enter the code WRONG at checkout.
That's 20% off any AquaTrue water purifier when you go to AquaTrue.com and use promo code WRONG.
Welcome back to Am I Doing It Wrong?
Colleen, I think we want to do sort of a lightning round. It doesn't have to be super lightning fast, but we got a bunch of questions from people in the newsroom when we told them that you were going to be coming through, and people are like, we don't know what we're doing. Mm-hmm. So we'll read them. Maybe just give us like, you know, kind of brief answers to these because they're all going to be sort of related. So the first one is from Ashley and she said, how do those electrolyte salt packets work and do they really boost or increase your hydration? Is that a gimmick? Like, are those kind of things actually going to make us more hydrated?
Great. Yeah, great question. And, you know, obviously there's something to be said about the marketing, very creative marketing with some of these products. Not a gimmick, but I would say you don't need those all the time. That's the thing where, you know, you could start to say, is this a marketing ploy and things along those lines. So, you know, if we get back to the conversation of how do we keep water in our body, electrolytes are a critical component to that, and particularly sodium and sodium chloride. We get those from other things in our diet though, right? So you don't have to just get them from a supplement packet. We eat all of our foods have those things in them too. So I would tell people that as long as you're eating regular meals, you probably don't need an electrolyte packet. Now that's a different conversation if we're talking about, yeah, like if you know you're going to be really busy throughout the day and you're not going to be able to eat very much, do they have utility? Absolutely. Is this somebody who's in the middle of a marathon and, you know, I don't know if you've ever tried to like eat a hamburger and run at the same time, but that's going to be hard and uncomfortable, right? So they have their utility 100%. So again, I would say if you're eating regular meals, you probably don't need them, but yeah.
What about Gatorade?
Yeah.
So first of all, this is always a hard one to address because there's so many different product lines that Gatorade has at this point. But if we were to just kind of think about the original product, I mean, it was definitely developed from scientific evidence. You know, there are oral rehydration solutions that are used in clinical practice, and a lot of the same things are found in those. And they are definitely effective, especially for clinical scenarios, you know, so like severe diarrhea, which we have to remember is a big issue in other parts of the world. You know, these oral rehydration solutions can be life-saving. But I think one of the things to remember about Gatorade, I would just tell people to actually look at the contents, right? Look at the electrolyte amounts. How do those compare to some of the other products that you might be considering? And then I would tell you to go back to what is my specific scenario. So if this is the daily person eating regular meals, does Gatorade, you know, is it necessary? Probably not. The exercising scenario, you know, Gatorade has a lot of palatability to it too. Some people don't like the taste of plain water. So if it allows them to intake fluids, great. Now we have kind of done calculations. If you were to try to use Gatorade to offset the amount of salt that you lose in your sweat during, let's say, a marathon, it's impossible actually. Like there's actually not that much sodium in Gatorade to offset sweat, you know, sodium sweat losses. So, you know, that's when we would start to think about things that are a little bit more potent, whether it's the salt tablets or some of those things. You know, there's a bunch of products out there that have higher sodium content. And so that would be more appropriate for that environment.
This is a good one that I've wondered about too. It's from Jillian. She said, is seltzer as hydrating as regular water? Mm-hmm. Why do I always feel thirsty after I drink seltzer?
Yeah. So short answer is yes, it's just as hydrating as regular water. I would even get back to once again, a lot of people like the taste, the mouth texture, you know, better than plain water. Now, the only thing to consider, I guess, with seltzer water, I know there were some people that were looking at, you know, if somebody drinks more, it has a preference for seltzer water, do they tend to drink more total water on a daily basis? And those data haven't necessarily panned out. It seems like people pretty much drink the same amount. There's only like been one study to my knowledge that even really looked at that. And to be honest, I'm not even sure if it was ever published. Those were data that I saw at a conference. But the other thing to keep in mind is that it's probably one of those things worth having a conversation with your dentist as well. Yeah. A lot of data that I've seen has not necessarily suggested that it does do a significant number on your tooth enamel. But there have been some suggestions that it could be something that threatens your tooth enamel if you drink a ton of seltzer water, you know, and then nothing else. I imagine there's more of that conversation if you have a predisposition, like, you know, it runs in the family that you don't have good enamel and things like that. So I would say seltzer water is a great tool for staying hydrated. I just might consider having a conversation with your dentist, you know, in terms of how much should you be drinking.
This is a good one from Kristen. She said, how much truth is there to the rumor that drinking ice cold water is bad for you? Does the temperature of our water matter? And does drinking room temperature water hydrate us faster or better, or using less energy in our body?
Before you answer this, I have to tell you, this is like an Ayurvedic belief from my culture, and I call bullshit on a lot of Ayurvedic beliefs. Okay. So like
that,
I
you should always drink lukewarm.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah. So please tell me.
Okay. So the only studies that I'm aware of that really kind of taught us a lot about this topic were done a while ago. I mean, I think the 80s. And if I remember correctly, they were done in dogs. Those were some of the first studies that allowed us to kind of understand what you're talking about. And to be perfectly honest, there is a potential that what you're saying has some validity to it. I think we would probably be, you know, you'd probably have to really focus on how much of that cold water are you drinking for this to make a difference. But long story short, you have these specialized cells in the back of your throat, and they communicate with your brain. And when they communicate, they're actually one of the driving forces for how much of that hormone that I was talking about earlier is released, that antidiuretic hormone, or what we normally call AVP. And so what those cells will do, if you chug a lot of water, it'll actually tell your brain to not release that antidiuretic hormone so that we don't retain too much water. Because again, that can be a life-threatening situation. Okay. So that's one reason why we tell people not to chug high volumes of water, is that you're not really going to retain it because that hormone was told to go away and it's really just going to get released in your urine.
That's so interesting.
But there are some of those studies that actually show a similar thing that you're talking about with the cold temperature. So we've done some of these studies before. We're really looking at that hormone, and we do only give them room temperature water for that very reason.
I love ice cold water. Yeah, that's crazy. Okay, what about, does lemon in water do anything? You know, everybody loves their morning
lemon water. Yeah.
So it's same sort of story, definitely helps with palatability. I would go back to have a conversation with your dentist. You know, that's the only thing where I think you might want to consider how much you're drinking lemon water. You know, the acidity could, over time, if you're drinking large amounts of it, could potentially threaten the health of your tooth enamel. But otherwise, from my perspective as a non-dentist and just a hydration scientist, I say thumbs up.
I mean, what I'm hearing you say time and time again now is just that anything that's going to get you to drink more liquid is probably a good thing if you're considering, you know, maybe the possible downsides of it. But let's then move to the ones that I think we classically have heard are diuretics, like coffee or tea. Is that true? What if you hate water? What if you hate soft drinks and you're like, but I have 8 cups of tea a day.
Oh,
is that bad? Is that going to work?
Well, I can comment on this topic with amounts of caffeine up to 500 milligrams. So the studies that have looked at this have only gone up to 500 milligrams of caffeine a day, which, I mean, is still a good amount, right? We're probably talking about, you know, 4 to 5 cups of coffee, depending on size and where you got it from and such. And so, but those studies have found that there doesn't seem to be any ill effect from a hydration standpoint of caffeine.
Oh.
Now, I would also like to mention that these studies were done in caffeine habituated people. So I don't know that we can comment on people who we would call caffeine naive. So people who aren't accustomed to drinking caffeine on a daily basis, could it have more of a diuretic potential? Perhaps. We don't have clarity on that.
But it's okay to get your hydration from coffee and tea, you're saying, or at least part have that be part of the plan.
My urologist told me that too, that like coffee and tea counts as a water, a drink. And I was like, what? Does beer? And then he was like, kind of.
Let's ask about that. Yeah, this is Raja's favorite topic. Besides talking about her kidney stone, she loves to talk about alcohol. So is alcohol hydrating?
Blanket story is that alcohol is not the same situation as caffeine. I mean, alcohol is a diuretic. so we need to recognize that right off the bat. But, you know, if we're talking about somebody who's going to have a very light beer and only like one or two, would I be concerned about it? Probably not. You know, so the studies that we do have on alcohol and hydration, you know, normally look at an alcohol content more than I just described. And they do find that it is a diuretic. It, you know, does have the ability to cause your blood concentration to go up. So that hormone gets released, that antidiuretic hormone eventually. So first we release a lot of water from the body via the urine, and then we all of a sudden get into this conservation mode. And so, you know, those are the times where it does get a little hard to make recommendations for people to stay hydrated if they're going to be drinking alcohol. Because if you're really drinking a lot of water at the beginning of your alcohol intake and that hormone's not there, then you're just going to keep peeing all that water out. But if you wait a little while until that hormone comes back, because now you've, you know, really lost a lot of body water, of course, it's time to start drinking more water than you might even be accustomed to, just to kind of, you know, get you back on track. And those are the cases I would definitely look at your urine, just to make sure you're not overshooting it too. But one quick comment though. So this topic of light beer has always been kind of interesting to me. And there's long been historical notes about people, and particularly like the coal miners and people like that, who after their shifts, you know, and they'd be sweating a lot, they would go to the bar, and they kind of found over time that they just felt better when they added salt to their beer. And so it all gets back to the electrolytes. They kind of figured out on their own that they could maintain their hydration status a little bit better if they drank salty beer. Now, there are other reasons why people will add salt to their beer these days, but that was one of the driving factors.
I'm just going to sub in a Michelada and call it a
day. There you go. Exactly. Yeah. Oh, so good.
My favorite.
Yeah. I want to get your take on this. I read this in Vogue. I don't know if we can trust Vogue or not. I mean, God bless them. But so this is an article about hydration, and it said, we've grown accustomed to eating meals along tall glasses of water, but it's actually the worst time to chug. Too much liquid with meals dilutes your digestive juices and can delay hydration. So you want to drink your water throughout the day between meals and hold off at least a half an hour before your meal and an hour after your meal. Does any of that seem true to you?
I think Vogue, I'm going to predict Vogue for the win with this.
Okay, let's
Please,
see.
Please, Professor Colleen, tell
us. I have never heard of this before. This is news to me.
No!
And I got to say, I can think of handfuls of data that would suggest otherwise, to be honest.
Okay.
You can drink water like just in between your meal, like a lot of water. Doesn't your food like flow in there, sadly?
Okay, well,
is that, did I make that?
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of nuances to even that. So, you know, one of the questions I guess would be, or even along those lines, is how fast is food moving from your stomach to your intestines? You know, so there's a lot of complexity around that. I mean, actually, what most people have suggested, dietitians, hydration scientists, et cetera, is that it's a good idea to drink fluids with your meals. I mean, one of the things is that it's going to allow you to have a little bit more of a consistent water intake plan. Some studies have even suggested that it could be a valuable weight management tool. So some people show that if you actually drink water before your meals, it tends to make you feel a little bit more full, and therefore you might not eat as much. There are some individual variations with that. So it's not something that would work with everybody, but it works with a lot of people. I mean, another reason I think why I'm kind of opposed to this recommendation is that, you know, one of the most important reasons as to why we need to drink water is to what we say is balance the renal solute load. And what that means is that our kidneys, that's the renal part of that sentence, is that they're responsible for kind of deciding what solutes or what particles from our diet should be kept in the blood, should be released via the urine. And there should be a proportional amount of water coming through with our dietary particles that we're eating to help the kidneys manage that. So if we don't drink enough water as they're trying to manage these particles, it can be really stressful on the kidneys. So that's one thing I would say, you know, is important to consider with this. I guess I would also say too, like, you know, I think I've heard this, so now that I'm thinking about it, I think I've kind of heard this myth before. And I would also say, like, why are we trying to rehydrate so fast? I can only think of a few circumstances where that's actually important. You know, it would be if we recently lost a ton of body water. So let's say extreme exercise in the heat, maybe, you know, extreme diarrhea, you know, things along those lines. And I would say, like, yeah, let's get some fluids back in and try to do this, you know, at a reasonable pace. For most people, that's not an issue, you know? So if getting back to what you were saying about the whole stomach emptying thing, you know, like I don't think that's actually a scenario that most people find themselves in.
Extreme martinis at the bar.
Right. Yeah. So I mean, okay. Yeah. Next day hungover.
No, but you're right. Like a day-to-day thing. No, you don't need to be chugging a ton of water, which brings me to my next question.
Yeah.
We touched on this, but it is possible to drink too much water. Can it be dangerous? What does that look like? What could happen?
Yeah. And it is a real thing. Again, not as often as you would, you know, think relative to somebody who is underhydrated, let's say. That's definitely a more common scenario, but it's something we need to pay attention to. So really the issue here is if you drink too much plain water, especially, or even fluids that don't match the concentration of your blood, you will dilute the blood. And if you do it substantially, you throw all of those electrolytes out of whack. And our blood is very conscious about those being in a particularly narrow range. So if they get too dilute, we start to have some pretty severe ramifications, largely related to our nervous system. So some of the things that happen when we dilute the blood is, and not too long after this, we get brain swelling, coma, death, and pretty quick.
Wow.
I've actually known some athletes that's happened to, and it's scary. It happens quickly. It's not always easily detectable. So a lot of times, unfortunately, they normally keep drinking water thinking that they collapse due to dehydration or something like that. And, you know, it's a mess.
God. But
this season, Instacart has your back to school. As in, they've got your back to school lunch favorites like snack packs and fresh fruit. And they've got your back to school supplies like backpacks, binders, and pencils. And they've got your back when your kid casually tells you they have a huge school project due tomorrow. Let's face it, we were all that kid. So first, call your parents to say I'm sorry, and then download the Instacart app to get delivery in as fast as 30 minutes all school year long. Get a $0 delivery fee with your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 an order. Additional terms apply.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
We all have dreams. Dream home renovations, dream vacations, or sending our kids to their dream colleges. But finding straightforward ways to turn those dreams into realistic goals, that's where things get tricky. Merrill understands that. That's why, with a dedicated Merrill advisor, you get a personalized plan and a clear path forward. And having the bull at your back helps your whole financial life move with you. So when your plans change, Merrill is with you every step of the way. Go to ml.com/bullish to learn more. Merrill, a Bank of America company. What would you like the power to do? Investing involves risk. Merrill Lynch, Pierce, Fenner & Smith Incorporated, registered broker-dealer, registered investment advisor, member SIPC.
So yeah, there's been some stories out there where it's devastating because not a lot of people know about that. I think one of the first ones that we all became aware of was in LA in, I think the early 2000s, if I remember correctly. It was pretty soon after the first Nintendo Wii came out. And one of the radio stations had some competition. I think it was called like P for a Wii or Wii for a Wii or something like that. But you know, unfortunately they didn't consult anybody before they did this. And they had participants in the challenge was whoever could drink the most amount of water in one day won the Nintendo Wii, and a woman died.
Oh no.
Yeah. So it's a thing, you know, it tends to happen much more so not in the general population, but actually a lot of like recreational exercisers. So people who do marathons, triathlons, who might not actually be working out as intensely as they might suspect. and they haven't really done a lot of homework in an individualized hydration plan. And so they just assume like more water, the better. So they're actually not sweating that much, you know, or they're not losing as much salt as they think or things like that, you know, so they start chugging water. And that's a lot of times when this happens, unfortunately.
I mean, we see on TikTok all the time now, people with their huge gallon water jugs and saying like, drink, here's how you can drink more water.
Comical,
and so I think you're right. I think people just don't know the science or aren't consulting their doctors before they do it. That's really scary.
Yeah.
Another thing I want to ask you about that's become so hot are these IV hydration centers, or, you know, you can even go to LA if you're hungover and you can have someone come over to your hotel room and they bring an IV bag and they hydrate you that way. How do you feel about that? It seems kind of sketchy to me, but do you think that that's actually a good thing?
I mean, I don't know if I could even say it's good or bad. I think it's an option for people.
It's just a thing.
Yeah, okay. I mean, it's an option. So if we're getting back to, you know, somebody who's really hungover, I mean, if you can't keep things down, you know, like if you're going to throw up whatever you just put in your mouth, then I think it's a great option. You know, there have been some studies done, particularly like late 90s, early 2000s, if I remember correctly, that really compared those two methods of fluid intake, you know, just oral rehydration, just drinking it versus intravenous, getting the IV in your arm.
Right.
And really, there wasn't any substantial differences between the two. They both rehydrate you pretty equally. The IV will do it faster a little bit, especially like when we look at the blood concentration. So again, I would get back to like, how fast do we really need to do this? But even more, and how much money do you have, right? Because you're going to have to pay for it.
Yeah.
But it could be a good option for people. I'm not totally against it, to be honest. But you do bring up a good point that anytime you're injecting anything into the body, there are safety considerations. Right. So
I don't want a needle in me ever. I would much rather have a bottle of water than have a needle
in me. So scared of needles. Yeah.
Yeah. So that it's not for you. No. But, you know, obviously people who are interested in that, I would just make sure you do your homework and make sure that it's actually somebody certified. You know, it's in their scope of practice and their clinical practice. I mean, most of the time it's like a registered nurse or even a nurse practitioner that comes out to do those things. So you're in great hands with them, you know.
Do you have any suggestions for like what often works to remind people to drink water when they're supposed to? Like some people have there's a cute app where you like grow your plant every day. Every time you're like, I drink a glass of water.
Right, like a Tamagotchi.
Oh my gosh, yeah. That's adorable. So, you know, I think there's a lot of things out there that people should try. It's not a one size fits all. I think there's a lot of good tools out there that people can use, you know, whether it's an app, whether it's a timer, whether it's a specialized water bottle. I think all of those things are good options. You know, I would comment that, you know, always important to keep in mind that for some people, and I know this is true in the exercise world as well, for some people, you know, writing things down or keeping track of them in an app or having a timer can actually create a decent amount of anxiety or, you know, obsession. So I'd always make sure that we're aware if we have some predispositions for those things to maybe consider another option. But I think they're all good options. I would like to comment on some data that we're trying to publish right now. It's in peer review, but we looked at attitudes, behaviors, and beliefs, and we separated our groups from the people who really don't drink a lot every day, who we sometimes call the low drinkers, to people who drink a lot. We call them the high drinkers. We did find some pretty interesting things just based on what you're talking about between these two groups of people. And so on average, the high drinkers, people who were successful in their hydration practices, said that they didn't have to use thirst as an indicator. They just drank consistently throughout the day. Most of the time they said they drank at least once per hour. Both groups actually said that they normally always have a beverage within arm's reach. So that might not necessarily be something that's a big target. It seems like everybody seems to have it close to them. Nobody likes going to the bathroom. Both groups were deterred, you know, to drink more water because of the bathroom breaks. But I think the one thing that was pretty interesting to me is that the low drinkers said that they really need somebody to check in with them. They need somebody to hold them accountable. So I think this is where we started to recognize some actual targets here that we can use to promote water intake in a number of people. And I think, you know, that's really what we need to start doing with these data that we're collecting on health outcomes. And when you look at how much money we're spending in our healthcare system and like a significant amount of that money, and obviously just the poor well-being that comes with it, so much of that is going towards preventable diseases, including some of the ones that we've mentioned already. So if water could be part of that risk profile, of reducing that risk profile, I mean, this could very well be our next like really obvious, simple public health solution. You know, water, thankfully, for most of us, and I'm not saying even across the whole country, is normally accessible, right? And obviously, I know there are some areas where that's not the case, and that's appalling. And I know there are people working on that.
Yeah. Maybe hopefully this episode can actually inspire some people to do that and to think about their hydration in ways that they haven't before, which I definitely am.
Yeah.
And I think that that's useful to me.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah.
Music to my ears.
Thank you for being here, Colleen. It's been truly hydrating.
Emotionally.
Hydrated with knowledge.
Spiritually hydrating. Yeah, completely. Yes. Great.
Well, love thank you it. So much for having me. I appreciate it.
It's time for Better in Five. This is your takeaway from what we just learned.
Number one, pee is key. It's the best indicator of how hydrated you are. And it doesn't need to be totally clear. A light yellow will do just fine.
Number two, we do need electrolytes, but most of the food we're consuming provides everything we need. So in most cases, you don't need extra.
Yep. Number three, seltzer and even tea and coffee in moderation does hydrate you.
Number four, you can be too hydrated, even dangerously so.
And number five, don't believe the myths. You can and should drink water while you're eating your meals.
So after all that, Raj, I feel like I have to pee just from talking about yes. this so much. But do you feel like you are hydrating wrong?
You know, I think I'm doing okay. I think I'm going to make it. I am drinking water, but I need to spread it out throughout the day and do some other things that are hydrating because I feel like it's like 7 p.m. I drink a ton of water and then I have to pee for the rest of the night.
Because you realize that you hadn't had enough
yes.
that day. Yeah. And you're trying to catch up.
Yes.
Yeah. You have to spread it out. Mm-hmm. I realize that I'm doing it wrong because I'm not doing it. Mm-hmm. But I loved hearing like all the myth busting that Colleen did.
Yeah.
And the idea that like she was just like, yeah, seltzer's great. Yeah, Gatorade's great. Yeah, tea, coffee, great. Light beer, great. Just get the fluid into your body.
Yeah, and removing the shame from just kind of like diversifying.
And then it has to just be like straight up water. And then yeah. you have to have like 4 gallons of it. She, again, so often our experts just give us permission
yeah.
to live our lives, but we can do it a little bit better.
Yeah.
And I felt like this episode is one of those.
Absolutely.
I'm going to try and do it better. I have some tools to do it. Also, you should love this because you're always about the skincare.
Yeah.
And we didn't even talk about this, but the water is so good for your skin.
It is. And Professor Colleen's like a great walking advertisement
she
for
really
that.
She really is.
Truly.
She looked amazing. Mm-hmm. Anyway, until next time, as long as there are things to get wrong, we're going to be right here to help you do them better.
Love y'all.
Do you have something you think you're doing wrong? Email us at amidoingitwrong@huffpost.com and let us know.
It can be hard balancing taking care of kids, senior loved ones, and yourself. Remember, it's okay to ask for help. There's a reason 29 million families have turned to Care.com. Find background-checked sitters, nannies, and senior caregivers who can help with everything from watching kids after school to senior meal prep. Whether you need full-time, part-time, or even occasional help, you can view rates and book highly rated caregivers that fit your budget and schedule. Get the help you need with Care.com.
Connect to Turkey's cultural heritage. Immerse yourself in the timeless beauty of Ephesus, where ancient civilizations once thrived. Gaze upon the awe-inspiring vistas of Cappadocia, where every sunrise paints a masterpiece in the sky. Each destination reveals a chapter of humanity's rich story. Discover the UNESCO World Heritage Sites in Turkey with Turkish Airlines.
Hi, this is Kim.
And this is Penn. We're from the Holderness Family Podcast.
And we're here to let you know you can get back to school ready at Whole Foods Market.
The Best in Class event is packed with sales on organic seedless grapes, organic Honeycrisp apples, Applegate deli meat, and much more.
Start your mornings with 365 by Whole Foods Market organic frozen waffles and better than cage-free eggs.
Then put dinner on the table with breaded chicken nuggets, savory swordfish fillets, and fresh salad kits.
Make Whole Foods Market your back to school destination.
Hi, this is Jonathan Fields, host of The Good Life Project, where each week I talk to listeners about investing in their future by increasing their own vitality. But when it comes to those financial goals, whether it be saving for a home renovation, growing your child's college fund, or travel, life can make it difficult to stay the course. By working with a dedicated Merrill advisor, you get a personalized plan and a clear path forward. Having the bull at your back helps your whole financial life move with you. So when your plans change, Merrill's with you every step of the way. Go to ml.com/bullish to learn more. Merrill, a Bank of America company, what would you like the power to do? Investing involves risk. Merrill Lynch, Pierce Fenner & Smith, Incorporated, registered broker-dealer, registered investment advisor, member SIPC.